Well, I know Chuck spoke a little bit about our Midweek of Joy, and we've been having a great time in Midweek of Joy. And as he said, it's not too late to jump in to it, but we've been taking a kind of an eight-week overview of the New Testament and looking at how it all fits together. In fact, we just finished looking through the book of Acts, the Acts of the Apostle, and we particularly noted the persecution that the early Christians were going through during that first century of the church at the hands of the Romans, and how the people were just facing such intense persecution. And this persecution continued on even past the New Testament era into the early church up until like the early fourth century. Persecution was intense in the Roman Empire of God's people. In fact, it was very dangerous to be a Christian. Many of those who followed Christ lost their homes and their livelihood. Many were arrested, put in prison, and many more were put to death for their faith. But you know, consistently, God would raise up men and women who bore witness to the value of Christianity and would actually offer defenses in the face of persecution in the world. In fact, in 130 AD, we're going to do a little history lesson this morning. In 130 AD, there was a Greek philosopher who came to Christ, heard the gospel, and his life was transformed by the gospel. And this philosopher would be one of the greatest apologists. You know, apologists is all people who offer defense for Christianity in history. And his name was Justin Martyr. If you've ever heard of Justin Martyr. Well, by the mid-second century, as he would talk about, you know, how faith in Christ is reasonable, you know, and you offer reasons for it, the Christians were still facing intense persecution and found himself in Rome. So he decided he would write up some defenses or share some defenses of why Christianity is true and it works. So as he wrote up these defenses to Christianity, he was saying, you know what, in the light of this, because Christians were getting blamed for everything, and they were looked at, charged with being against the Roman Empire, because instead of worshiping many gods, as most people did, they only worshiped one god, and it wasn't Caesar. And then they were thought to be rebellious against society because they wouldn't take part in the immoral practices that everybody else was doing. And they would set themselves apart from that. And people would say, well, these people are rebels and they're trying to cause trouble. So into this, Justin Martyr wrote this defense of Christianity, basically saying, you know what? No, Christians aren't troublemakers. They're not a threat to Rome. Rather, they are, and I'll quote him here, he says, they are the emperor's best helpers and allies in securing good order. You see, in this apology that he writes, or this defense that he writes, he says, instead of rebelling, these Christians, they pray for their leaders, as Paul instructed them to pray for the leaders over them. And you know, instead of trying to get away with things or cheat other people in society, they're faithful in paying their taxes, as Jesus told them to do. And they work hard and contribute to the good of society. In short, he said this, Christians make good citizens. And that was his great argument for that Christianity works, because Christians make good citizens. And what he's saying in that is Christianity is true and it's reasonable because Christianity proves or provides a living witness. And you know, it's this theme of living witness as we think about this and Christians make good citizens. It's this theme of living witness that we see as we return to the life of Joseph this morning. So if you have your Bibles, you can open up. We left off right in the middle of chapter 41 of Genesis in the story of Joseph. And if you remember why you're turning, just give a quick recap again. He was the most beloved son of Jacob, and he was a son of the promise that God had given through the line of Abraham. But he was having quite a rough go of life. In fact, his brothers betray him, and in their betrayal, he ends up down in Egypt as a slave. and things are pretty bleak, but yet God causes them to be successful. Things are looking up. And just when they're starting to look up, he ends up falsely accused of something and ends up back in prison. And even in prison, God blesses him, makes him successful. And things are looking up. Things are looking especially up when he interprets two dreams of Pharaoh's cupbearer and his baker. And when the cupbearer then is restored to his place in Pharaoh's court, Joseph is like, yeah, you know, he'll be my advocate. But instead, he forgets about Joseph. And Joseph's left in prison to die. So things are looking bad. But then last week, we saw things take a real turnaround, didn't we? The beginning of chapter 41, we see the Pharaoh, he has two dreams. And in these dreams, he says, these dreams have to mean something. What do they mean? And nobody can tell him what they mean. And amazingly, the cupbearer remembers something. Hey, there was a guy in prison who used to interpret dreams. So Pharaoh summons Joseph out of prison. He says, here's my dreams. And Joseph tells Pharaoh what these dreams meant. Basically, these dreams were about a coming seven-year period of plenty or great harvest, followed by 7 years of intense famine. And then Joseph tells Pharaoh, so here's what you got to do with this coming. Be warned, it's coming soon. So you're going to have to find somebody that can oversee this and make sure that we're collecting and that you're getting enough collected during the time of plenty so that when the famine comes, you have something. And we left off in verse 37, where it said, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. So again, things are looking up, aren't they? God's rescuing. It seems like God is finally rescuing Joseph out of this, and maybe his troubles might be done. And boy, does God rescue him. Joseph can't even imagine what God has planned for him and what we're going to see today. So here's where we pick up in verse 38. So Pharaoh just says, man, this sounds good to me. And then Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this? We need somebody. Can we find a man like this? In whom is the Spirit of God? Oh, he recognizes something, doesn't he? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and as wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and he put it on Joseph's hand. You know what this is a symbol of? That means that Joseph, basically, when he speaks, it's like Pharaoh speaking. And then he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put gold chain around his neck. And he made him ride in a second chariot. And as they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Well, this is pretty different, isn't it, from prison? Just a little bit. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zephanath-Paneah, and he gave him in marriage Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. So Joseph went out over the land of Egypt. Do you see what's happening here? Instead of being in prison and being the lowest of lows, now he's been taken to the heights of heights that no one can even imagine. Remember Potiphar, he was the king of the guards, and we said he's a great man in Egypt. Joseph's higher up than this. In fact, Pharaoh gives Joseph power and authority. He gives him honor and he gives him position. He even gives him a family. You know, at this point, Joseph's 30 years old. This is 13 years have gone by since he was betrayed by his brothers and he was taken away from his own family in God's promised land. And now Pharaoh says, I'm going to give you your own family. And establishes him there. So Joseph's in this new position and guess what? He gets busy. He gets to work. In fact, he goes out through the land of Egypt. And as the passage continues, he goes out through the rest of Egypt. And for the next 7 years of this great abundance, you know what he does? He starts getting all the extra things that were harvested. and starts taking a portion of the harvest in every city, and he starts putting it aside, stocking it up. In fact, it says what he was able to stockpile was beyond measure. Verse 49 says, it outnumbered the sand in the sea. We've heard that term before, haven't we? When it talks about the descendants of Abraham. So this is a lot of food that he has set forth. And during these 7 years, something else happened. Joseph had two sons. Verse 51, it says, he called the name of the firstborn son Manasseh. For he said, God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house, or everything that had happened to me bad. The name of the second he called Ephraim. For God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So that happened all during the 7 years. And then after the 7 years, guess what happens? The famine hits. Just as God had told Joseph and Pharaoh in this dream. And the famine begins, and it's severe everywhere. But in the land of Egypt, they have bread, or they have food. And the people, they had went through their own personal food. So then they come to Pharaoh, and they say, Pharaoh, this famine's really bad. We just ran out of food. What are we supposed to do? And Pharaoh tells the people, go see Joseph and do what he tells you to do. Literally says, what he says to do, do. And then verse 56 continues. It says, so when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. Sold them food. For the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. But look at verse 57. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. So this is quite a turnaround for Joseph, isn't it? All this that we're talking about Joseph, every time he gets up, he gets knocked back down. Well, now all of a sudden, God's plan for him is, I'm going to lift you up. And I'm going to place you in such a place of responsibility. He went from forgotten in prison to honored as Egypt's second in command. And you know, through all those times of getting knocked down and everything, remember, Joseph endured that. As we talked about last week, he kept walking. He kept clinging to God and kept saying, you know what? I'm just going to continue to do what's in front of me. And even though he couldn't see a way out of all that hardship, he stayed faithful and he stayed ready for what God had for him and thankful. And now we see this week, God once again has Joseph right where he wants him. It's a brand new place. So Joseph's right where God wants him. So what's the next step now? Now that things are going well for Joseph, I mean, things are going better. What should his life look like now? Well, as we look, we're going to take a little closer look at this passage. Because what we find in this passage is that, true to form, Joseph makes the most of right where God has him. And actually, as we look closer at this passage, what we discover is how we can make the most of wherever God has us, out in our world or to our world. Maybe it's work or school or as a parent or in your community. How do we make the most of those opportunities that God places us out there in the world? In fact, what this passage reveals to us, or what it gives to us, is it gives us a blueprint for being a living witness in a world. Remember, we were talking about Christians, make good citizens. They were a living witness in their world. And what this passage this morning gives us is a blueprint for how we can be a living witness in our world. So, you see, we best show other people Jesus in our lives through the way we live, through the way we live out our lives, by first of all, being faithful with what we're given. When we're out in the world, we're a living witness. We show other people Jesus by being faithful with what we're given, our responsibilities. We're faithful in them. You see, Joseph was given a huge responsibility, wasn't he? A huge assignment by Pharaoh. He said, you're going to be second in command. So the weight of Egypt is going to be on you. And actually, our very survival is in your hands. Now imagine going to work tomorrow, and your boss looks at you and says, all right, I know we just make pretzels here, and you work at a pretzel factory, but what we do today, the fate of the world rests on you. Imagine you go into work tomorrow, or imagine you go to school tomorrow, or imagine you wake up with your kids, and God says, you know, the fate of the world rests on your day today at work. This is basically what Joseph gets. And Pharaoh says, man, the fate of our survival rests on you. And you know what Joseph did? He was faithful with it. He made sure that he got it done. It says that he traveled through all the land, right? He didn't just sit back and just say, ah, we're good. We got this done. No, he oversaw the job of gathering all this harvest, and he stocked it up for the famine, you know? It was no easy job that he had. It was huge. Yet he made sure that it got done. In fact, he did it so well that Pharaoh had no worries about it being done. So that when people came to him, Pharaoh didn't say, I don't know what we're going to do. He said, you know what? No, Joseph's got this. So go see him and do whatever he tells you to do because he's got this. You know, being faithful is huge. Being faithful with what we're given is huge. And in fact, I'm sure we can kind of all agree with that, right? Faithfulness is a big deal. It's important, especially when it comes to spiritual matters. And we say, yeah, of course we're supposed to be faithful and, you know, going to church and growing. And we're supposed to be faithful with the word of God to know that it's true and to follow that. We're to be faithful in our marriages and all these things. But, you know, sometimes we look at that faithfulness and we say, yeah, faithfulness is important with church stuff, with the big stuff. Yet, we sometimes forget the importance of faithful even in the little things. Like what I do at work or school tomorrow. How important is being faithful at your work, in your job? See, faithfulness means you're responsible with what's been given to you to get done, to be there on time, to do what you're asked to do. That's faithfulness at work. And we do it as an act of worship. Or how about being faithful at school, doing your assignments with diligence and care? Or maybe you serve in town on a committee or something, and you're the one that people say, well, no, if we need something done, we'll go to them because we know they're faithful to get it done when we assign them something. Or as a parent, that our kids can count on us as we follow Jesus. You see, we live in a world today that's increasingly more and more away from the church. So faithfulness out in our world becomes that much more important and a stronger witness. Even in those things that sometimes we think are the little things. In fact, Jesus talks about that. Being faithful in the little things. And in Luke chapter 16, he says, one who's faithful in a very little is also faithful in much. And one who's dishonest in very little is dishonest in much. If then you've not been faithful in unrighteous wealth or things that you might think aren't spiritual, then who's going to entrust you with those things that are of spiritual value? Because it's all spiritual value. And Jesus is saying, you know what? Be faithful. Be faithful in what you're tasked to do in life. And that provides a witness. Seeing, be faithful where we are with what we're given. It provides a powerful living witness of Jesus in our world. And you know, Jesus continues to be seen in our lives and the way we live by also being productive. And we see this with Joseph too. Not only was he faithful and saying, all right, this is my job, I'm going to do it. But he was productive. He was productive in every situation. He made the best use of his time. You know, that's one of the biggest losses in companies with workers. Isn't theft from the company like stealing staplers and things like that? It's not embezzling money. You know what it is? It's wasting time. At work, when we're to be working and we're, you know, on Facebook or something, or we're just saying, I'll get it done eventually. But yet, it's a powerful living witness when we're productive in every situation. And Joseph, he wasn't just faithful, he was productive. In fact, we even see this idea of being productive and this message continue through his children. In how he names his children, he communicates a message. Remember, his first child, Manasseh, literally means forget. And he says, because I've now forgotten about my hardship. I've left it behind. I'm no longer letting that hold me back. And then his next son was named Ephraim, which means fruitful. He says, so I'm not going to let the past hold me back anymore. I'm going to go forward with what God has. And that's his message through the names of his kids. And he says, so that's what I'm going to be about. You know, how often do we let that happen to us? We let our past hold us back, making us less productive. I know I can be. You know, maybe it's a past hurt that we've had, or it's a failure, and we're just like, man, I'm afraid of getting fired, or I'm afraid that I'm going to fail, so I don't know if I even want to try. And we kind of get paralyzed in our production, in our diligence in working, to where we just sit there and say, man, I don't know. I don't know if I can move forward. Like I need to. Have you ever been there? See, Joseph gives us a blueprint for this. He goes, forget what lies behind and just be productive. That kind of reminds you of Paul, right? In Philippians, where he says, forgetting what's behind me, I press on. So instead of you know, Joseph could have just gotten this new position that he had, and he could have put his hands back and said, finally, I've arrived. I got a cushy life. You know, I got beautiful new clothes. I got a nice chariot. People get out of my way on the highway. It's pretty neat. Got this cool ring that I could tell people what to do. Man, I've arrived. He could have sat back, or he could have sought revenge against the people who put him down. He could have went to Potiphar and had him thrown in prison. Or he could have went after the cupbearer for forgetting him for 2 years. But he didn't do that, did he? You know what he did? He got busy. He says, I can't let that hold me back. I got to do what God's put before me and make sure we get it done. So Joseph, he went forward and he worked hard. But do you know why he worked hard? He worked hard for God. It was an act of worship. In fact, Paul talks about that in Colossians. He echoes this. He says, bondservants or workers, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters or in authority over you. Not by way of eye service or people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily. You know what work heartily means? Work hard. As for the Lord, not for men. Do you know that how hard we work, how we use our time, bears witness to our world about Jesus? Do you know that? How hard we work, how we use our time. It tells people about Jesus in us. So think about that next time, you know, we're putting something off or we're kind of saying, oh, I kind of. And that doesn't mean we become a workaholic for Jesus. It doesn't mean we just say, oh, I got to keep working. It doesn't mean that. What it means is that when it's time to get things accomplished, we get things accomplished. We work on them, not for the sake of getting a pat on the back from somebody, but because God's called us to. He's placed us where we are to be a living to him, to live, to work, to serve as worship. It's a means of thanks that people can see in us and look to him. So, you know, being productive where we are with what's before us, it provides a powerful witness, living witness of Jesus to our world. And you know, just as Jesus is clearly seen through our faithfulness, through our production, You know, there's one more area that this passage talks about in being a living witness, and that's by being a blessing to those around us. Do you know that's a witness? Is to make the lives of the people around us that we come in contact with better. You know, it seems everywhere that God took Joseph, he made Joseph a blessing. When he was in Potiphar's house as a slave, he blessed Potiphar's house. When he was put in prison, he blessed the prison. And the guard said, man, this is going great. Let's put him there. Well, how much more now than when God places him in a position of authority in Egypt will God make Joseph a blessing? In fact, when we look back at our chapter, look back at the end of the chapter, it says, so the famine spread and Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. But then verse 57, moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain. Do you know what this is saying? Through Joseph, Egypt became the center of the world. Egypt became the most powerful nation on earth because they had food. And this was through Joseph. And Joseph being a blessing even goes beyond there because Joseph blessed his employer. He blessed Pharaoh. Pharaoh, during this famine, became the richest and most powerful leader in the entire world. Now, how do we know that? Well, if we look forward a few more chapters, and you can just write the passage down, I'll tell you what it says. Chapter 47, starting in verse 13, and for about the next 12 or 13 verses, it talks how, more specifically, how Joseph oversaw the food during the famine. And here's what it talks about. It says, so when the famine started, people started coming to Joseph. And they said, we need food. And he goes, good, I'll sell it to you. And he sold the food. And he took the money and gave it to Pharaoh, making him rich. Then the people ran out of money, but they still needed food. And they came to Joseph and said, we don't have any food. And we don't have any money to pay for it. What do we do? And Joseph said, I'll give you food for your livestock. Bring all your livestock to me. So they gave him all his livestock and he gave him food. And Joseph gave all that livestock to Pharaoh. So now Pharaoh's flocks were innumerable. Then the people came and said, now we don't have money, we don't have livestock, and we don't have food, but we need food. So Joseph said, well, then bring me your lands. Sign over your lands to Pharaoh. And also sign over yourselves in service to him. And we'll give you food. So now Pharaoh now owns all of the land of Egypt and even beyond because of Joseph. And that's going to come in important in a couple weeks when we look at something. But God used him to be a blessing. Then even after the famine, chapter 47 says, then Joseph went and he gave the people seed. And he says, you know this land that Pharaoh has you on that's his now? Go and plant. And when you harvest, take one-fifth of your harvest and bring it back to Pharaoh. So now he even provides Pharaoh an ongoing revenue stream that continues on. Boy, talk about employee of the month. This is employee of the month stuff, isn't it? But what he is, he's a blessing to those he comes in contact with, those that he's serving, because he's serving God. And he's seeking to be a blessing. You know, God's called us to be a blessing to those we serve as well. As parents, be a blessing to our kids. At school, to be a blessing to the teachers and also to our fellow students. At work, to be a blessing to our coworkers and our company. So that we're doing everything we can do to make sure that they're successful and they have what they need. He gives us these so others will see Jesus in us. And Jesus talks about that on the Sermon on the Mount when he says, we're the light of the world, a city set on a hill. It can't be hidden. And then he goes on to say, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they're going to see your good works and they're going to give glory to your Father who's in heaven. They're going to notice. So I guess the question is, how conscious are we in seeking to bless others that we work with, or that we're in school with, or those in our own family that we're put as stewards over? How conscious are we to say, you know what, I want to bless those around me? You know, give above, go above and beyond at work. You know, more than what our job description says, to make sure that our company's successful. Or maybe at school, we finish early, we finish a project early, so we go and help our student in their project to say, I want to see you succeed at this too. I want to see you get better. You know, one of the things Debbie did when she was a nurse was really cool. And being a blessing to our coworkers is this, and especially before we had kids, but even after we had kids, you know, we get to the holidays. When you're a nurse, you don't want to work holidays. I don't know if you've ever had shift work, but that's the worst, especially Christmas. As a mom and you're missing Christmas with your kids and things like that. So Debbie, leading up to Christmas, she would go to her coworkers and say, does anybody work Christmas that doesn't want to work Christmas? I'll do it for you. And we don't have to switch or anything. You don't have to pay me back. I'll just do this so you can have off with your family. That's blessing those you come in contact with. And you know what that did? That sowed seeds where then she could share Jesus. And when they would ask, why are you doing this? Because it's important to celebrate Jesus. And I want you to be able to do this. You see, we're to be a blessing to those we come in contact with. That's a living witness. In fact, being a blessing, sir, as we serve, provides this powerful living witness to our world. You see, God gives us work. He gives us responsibilities. He gives us work more than just to provide a paycheck for us. Do you know that? He gives us school for more than just an education. He gives us friends and families more than just for companionship or what they give us. God brings us out into our world to be a witness. He gives us these things as an opportunity for Jesus to be seen in and through us. In the way that we work, in the way that we study, in the way that we lead others. And through being faithful and productive and being a blessing, others see Jesus in us. They're our living witness. You see, we live in a world today that it's not that much different than that second century church where Christians were being persecuted and people were saying, oh, you know, Christians are lazy, they're troublemakers, they're all these things, you know? They don't really know what's going on in the world. It doesn't work. I've been told being Christians, just believing in fairy tales. I don't know if you've ever been told that. But you know what? We get to show people that being a Christian and following Jesus works. In fact, as Justin Martyr said, we can be good citizens. Christians make good citizens. They also make good employees, good parents, good students, and good friends as well. As we seek and are conscious that these are given to us to be a living witness in our world. So that's God's call for us, as it was for Joseph. To be a living witness in our world.